On this episode of Still Loading, Nanita Desai. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of Still Loading. This week's episode, I had the pleasure and the joy of interviewing Nanita Desai. Nanita is a video game and film composer from the UK, and she recently scored her first full video game called Telling Lies, which actually just came out recently. Kind of in the same vein as the game that Austin Wintory was talking about last week, Erica. Completely different games, but it's one of those games where it's live-action video that you interact with. It was a pleasure to get to speak to her, and I can't thank her enough for coming onto the podcast. And just a quick forewarning, her audio is really good. Mine isn't so much. I recorded this through Skype, and for some reason, the mic I was using was a little bit more crackly. Thankfully, her audio was crystal clear, and that should do it for my little intro to this. So here's my interview with Nanita Desai.
Starting this podcast has allowed me so many opportunities, and I've been very lucky that I get to speak with a lot of amazing people on the show. A couple years ago, I interviewed a chiptune composer from Japan, and for regular listeners, you'll know that I've been interviewing a lot of video game composers recently. Continuing with that trend, I'm really happy to have Nanita Desai on today's podcast. So, Nanita, how are you doing today?
I'm very well today. It's a lovely Saturday afternoon. Thank you very much for inviting me to chat, Josh.
Thank you for coming on. When I got the email about the game that you have coming out, I was really excited to get to interview you, especially because you're the first person from the UK that I've ever interviewed. So this is really cool for me. So let's jump right into it. The game you have coming out, it's called Telling Lies. And I watched the trailer and it seemed like a really unique game. It seemed like a kind of a choose your own adventure kind of live action video game. But could you tell me a little bit more about it and a little bit more what it was like composing for it?
Sure, Josh. Well, Telling Lies is a narrative, non-linear video game. I guess you could also kind of say it's an interactive movie because it has a lot of those. It's FMV, it's all live action. There's no CGI or graphics at all. So it's a video game that where players are presented with a database of video that slowly reveals a mystery. And Sam Barlow, the designer, developer, said that it's kind of a spiritual successor to Her Story, which is the first game that Sam made. And so in this one, you've got multiple characters. Players find themselves sitting in front of an anonymous laptop loaded with a stolen NSA database of video footage. So you explore the database by typing in search terms and keywords. When you type in a word, for instance, if you type in the word murder or love, which is a very obvious word to throw in, it will pull up a database of the top five video scenes where those words are spoken. And so it's totally non-linear. There's probably over 10 hours worth of video material, but it's not about piecing together the story so much. It's about the experience. I was given a 350-page script to work with, which is so it's huge in that, you know, so it's bigger than any film script I've ever been given, because it's about private conversations and about the experience. You know, everyone from a political perspective, it's about the government's invasion of privacy. And so everyone's double-crossing everyone, hence the title, Telling Lies. Everyone's manipulating people. And that's what I love about it. It's that sort of spy, covert hacking concept. So that's what the game is about in a very loosely vague way. and it's not necessarily about reaching the end, though there is, you know, your experience of the game will be very different from the next person's experience.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And so it's not a choose your own adventure in the traditional sense. For example, I remember watching Bandersnatch, that the Black Mirror episode of
Yeah,
Bandersnatch.
on Netflix.
Yeah, and so it's very cool to go down this narrative, sophisticated, complex narrative storytelling that's very rich, which is what telling lies is. And Bandersnatch is very brave. You know, I suppose they're in. It's very easy to compare this game to that form of entertainment. But it's not like Bandersnatch because, you know, it's not like you have a tree and, you know, you sort of make binary choices. Someone who plays Telling Lies will have a very different experience from someone else. And you don't have to watch every clip. That's not the point of the game. I've never experienced anything like it ever. And so I can't wait for it to be shared with the rest of the world.
I am actually that really gets me excited for the game, because a lot of like I didn't watch or play Bandersnatch, but that's really cool, because that's harkening back to like the old FMV games from the early 90s with like oh my gosh, I'm just blank it, Night Trap. And then also that, like, the idea of typing in commands, sort of commands to, or like search parameters, I guess technically, to pull up different clips. That reminds me of Zork from like the 70s and 80s, where you just type in commands and try to figure it out. So it's a really cool hybrid of the two, and that actually that really interests me, and I'm probably going to buy this when it comes out. For listeners who's hearing this, the game is will already be out by the time you're listening to this, but at the time of recording this, it's a little bit before then. So it's coming out, I think you told me before, August 23rd, correct?
Yes, that's right.
So what drew you to this project? What made you want to kind of branch out into this?
I mean, I've been writing music for film and TV for the last 20 years, sort of traditional linear forms of entertainment. And looking at the way technology is advancing and the way that people are consuming entertainment these days with streaming, mobile phones, and so on, I'm really interested in working on projects that play and bend people's perception of how they're meant to be entertained. And so I actually started off in writing, doing sound effects and music for video games, over, and then through one thing led to another, and I ended up then writing, going into film and TV for 20 years, and now I've come full circle, which is really exciting for me, and this makes me feel ancient now. You know, when I was a child, I was playing. My best friend had an Atari console, and I used to go around to her house and play Space Invaders, which I loved. And when I was working on games, I worked for a major publisher of games here in the UK, and so I was working for lots of his developers, and I was working on flight simulators, sort of World War II flight simulators, and Nintendo One, the original game console of Sheep, and Monopoly, and all sorts of a pro pinball. So I would create sound effects because I went to film school and studied sound design. So sound was something that really resonated with me. I'd always been a bit of a geek and a bit of a tomboy, and I wanted to work in music engineering. And so technology was my way into the industry. I'm not classically trained. I've got a degree in mathematics. So and I studied the wave equation, which was incredibly geeky and nerdy, and fractals, and you know, the beauty of numbers and the beauty of sound. That's what really turned me on. But I also loved film, and I played musical instruments as a child. So all those different skill sets and interests led me to wanting to create sound effects and work in sound design and get into video games. So that was my introduction to games. I'm digressing. I should. So your question was asking me about how I then got into writing the music for Telling Lies.
What drew you to the project?
So Sam contacted me on Twitter,
Okay.
and Sam Barlow comes from this great pedigree of working, creating Silent Hill, which is this huge game and
That's insane. I
this
actually looked that up.
franchise.
That's
Yeah.
crazy.
And then he'd made Her Story, which I think won several many awards for him, and it was quite groundbreaking at the time. I think he'd heard some music of mine on a film I'd scored and thought that it resonated with him, and he thought that it would fit well with the tone and the mood of Telling Lies. And that was such an amazing dream of mine to work on something like that, because it really interested me, that I thought this can't be, it's a friend of mine pulling a prank. And so then I said, yeah, sure, okay, tell me more about it. And then he disappeared for 3 months, and I totally forgot about it. And
It
I
confirmed
said,
your
hey,
suspicion.
yeah. And then he came back and he said, hey, the contract's signed, I'm ready to go, let's do it. And I thought, oh, okay, this guy means business. So I was involved in it for over 2 years, actually. It's a long gestating project, and it took a long time to come to fruition, as do most games. And you can be working on them for years, and that's not a way, it's not a process that I'm used to working on. That length of time that I was involved for had its downsides and its upsides. The way that technology has been advancing, engaging audiences in a different way, that's what really interests me about, and storytelling, that's what interests me about Telling Lies, and how to take people on an immersive storytelling journey, so that they really engage with it. So Sam brought me on board because he felt that I had cinematic storytelling sensibilities that I could bring to this project. So the intention was to connect the player directly to the emotional core of the story. So as the game was being developed, Sam and I had a lot of in-depth conversations about the characters and the multiple facets of their personalities and their dramatic arcs. So very sort of linear form of looking at things. So in that regard, it wasn't very different from scoring for film.
Okay.
When you're writing for film, I'm thinking about bringing out the subtext of what's not on the screen. If you're scoring the action, it becomes a very superficial experience. So if you're watching an action movie and you're scoring action-based music, that's you see that all the time in film, and it works, of course. What really turns me on when I'm watching certain movies is when the music doesn't do that. It's bringing out something hidden, in the subtext and the narrative that is not
I get you.
obvious. And that's what we were striving to achieve musically in this game, in Telling Lies. You have these four characters. The challenge was for me to write one piece of music that represented each character.
Okay.
And so each character is very complex, and they've got multifaceted aspects. As we are as human beings, we have a lot of different qualities to our personalities that come out when we're with different people. I'll be different when I'm with my parents, and I'll be different when I'm with my partner, and I'll be different to when I'm with my mates. And we have all these multifaceted aspects to how we function as human beings. And so each theme, so the challenge with Musical.ly was to write a theme that represented a character, and all their flaws. So we have a main loop. I'm getting quite technical here.
No, it's fine. This is all
yeah.
interesting to me.
So we have a main loop, and that represents the external qualities of the character. And then as you play, as you delve deeper in, dig deeper into the story, out comes the person's psyche and true motives of what's going on with the storytelling. Then that unlocks a hidden section in the piece of music, in the theme. And that helps signal to the player that, oh, right, okay, I'm onto something here. you see.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it doesn't have wall-to-wall music. We don't need it. So when you do, there's a lot of silence in the game. It's quite naturalistic in that respect. You know, you might have a 15-minute scene, and a long scene where sometimes there's not much going on. And but when you do have music coming in, it has an impact. I'm just thinking of David Lynch Twin Peaks
Okay.
series 2, and there's a scene where there's a man sweeping the floor in the restaurant, and it goes on and on and on, and it's very natural and real. And normally, when you're watching a drama, the camera will cut away because you've got to jam pack it with all sorts of story devices and dialogue and action on screen to keep the viewer engaged. David Lynch really plays with storytelling devices, and he breaks all the rules in the book. And you just see this bloke sweeping the floor for about what seems like an eternity, like 6 minutes or something. And you think, when is the camera going to cut away? And it doesn't. But what's interesting is the impact of that. I'm remembering that scene now. And Sam Barlow, he really plays with form. And it's going to be really interesting to see how people respond to this edgy, groundbreaking form of storytelling.
It's really cool. I like the fact that it's more, it's combining video games and movies in a way that we haven't really seen before, in the sense, because like I said before, Night Trap kind of did it in the early 90s, but it wasn't really done by a professional Hollywood studio or like someone who has experience directing. It's just a bunch of people, and I don't know, maybe the actors, I don't know enough about the actors who are in Night Trap. Maybe they've gone on to do some great things, like, or more things in the industry. I have no idea, but it's really cool to see, well, like, what would be a film director's approach to making an interactive video game, but using their skills and to supplement it with gameplay. It's a really cool idea. It's really interesting.
Well, they had a whole film crew. I mean, they really, because it's published by and has huge input from Annapurna Interactive, who are the gaming division of Annapurna Pictures. They were able to utilize a lot of the filmmaking expertise and resources that Annapurna Pictures have. So they had a whole film crew, and they took over, I think, three houses and several apartments. And I mean, they were filming for 6 weeks. There were a lot of cinematic influences on this. I mean, I love that genre of noir and spy movies and hacking and things about covert intelligence. And I mean, I worked on a feature, one of my first features that I ever worked on was a film called Hackers. And I worked
I
on
saw
some of
that
the
on your
sound design,
website.
Angelina Jolie's first, one of her first sort of groundbreaking roles that sort of helped her on her career. And years later, it's become a bit of a cult success. So movies like that. And but in terms of inspiration for this and musically, Francis Ford Coppola's The Conversation, which is one of my all-time favorite
I actually
movies.
have seen that movie. It's a really good movie.
And I got into that film because I was really interested in sound and recording at the time. And then things like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and Sex, Lies and Videotape, the early Soderbergh movie. So Telling Lies takes from those kind of inspirational. I remember Jane Fonda in Klute and Robert Redford in All the President's Men, and those political thriller covert kind of storylines. There's so many that have a bearing on this game. And musically, I was listening to a lot of music with Sam, and we'd share a lot of playlists and think, what's the right tone for this? But right from the beginning, I mean, I was listening to a lot of modern classical music. There are a lot of things that inspired us. But I kind of knew from the outset when I first spoke to Sam about what he wanted. There are a lot of physical barriers in this game, visual barriers, because it's covert, because you're looking at footage from webcams and CCTV cameras and phone footage, mobile phone footage, those kinds of slightly degraded textured visuals and looking at visuals from different sources, and it's not pristine and beautifully filmed in that regard. I wanted to bring across those gritty textures into the music, and also because it's all very intimate and cerebral, the sort of the complexities of the storytelling with the characters. So musically, I wanted the music to sound very edgy and visceral and grainy. So I brought in, there's a fantastic orchestra called the London Contemporary Orchestra, the LCO. Okay. They've worked on a lot of scores for Johnny Greenwood and Mika Levy and sort of film composers. And that's the sound I wanted. The fact that you can actually hear the relationship between the player, the musician, and their instrument, because of the techniques that they use, this sort of grainy, edgy, raw, gritty, dirty feel to the way actually play the instruments. And that psychological parallel with all these aspects of the game itself. So it was quite deep in that regard in terms of the psychology of it. And then the actual music itself is quite intimate and slightly cerebral. It has those qualities, and it has a relaxed pace overall with a modern classical orchestral score that has lots of repeated structures in the music. And even those repeated structures reflect the way that the player of the game is consuming the experience of the footage, because you watch a video clip and you're scrubbing backwards and forwards. So if you type in a keyword and you watch a video clip with that word in it, you're not watching it from the beginning of the clip. You actually maybe dropped in halfway through the scene. And so it becomes even more complicated, because you can then rewind and go forward and scrub backwards and forwards like an old video player.
That's really cool.
So we wanted that sensibility to come across in the music as well. So it was a lot of thought that went into how we structured it all.
No, that makes sense. You actually answered one of the questions I was going to ask in a little bit, but I watched the trailer and the music in it was like super creepy, but at the same time, somewhat a little playful. And I was going to ask what kind of aesthetic it was, but you kind of answered it. It's a very raw, gritty aesthetic. Is that what you're going for with this score?
Well, I mean, it depends on the personality of each character. I can't really give too much away, because even the track titles are very, we don't want to give away with...
Understandable.
The tone of the music overall is quite intimate and cerebral, and so we needed to complement these complex Machiavellian plot lines with all these varied narrative threads. And so I could really ramp up the intimacy in the music, so that you actually hear the actual playing of the music and the theme in a very detailed way. And that adds additional textures to the game as well. So the game experience should feel intimate and almost voyeuristic and warm. And we hope that the music could help really get that across to the player.
I'm really excited to try this out when it gets released. So what did you experience, any unexpected challenges when you were writing the score for this?
Yeah, I think the main challenge for me was not having any visuals to work with, because I'm traditionally a very visually inspired person. If I'm working on a film or TV project, I'll know what I, as soon as I see a rough cut or rough images, I'll know that it speaks volumes to me in the way that the tone of the editing, the look of an image. You know, I can look at a still image and I can draw so much from it in terms of inspiration. Whereas here, I didn't have that privilege. So I was given a script to work from. And but Sam is so descriptive about explaining the personalities of these people and the story that I found it was interesting for me to be inspired in a different way, and it forced me to write music in a different way than I would have had I had visuals to work with. Even if you're working on a traditional game, you'll be given images from graphic screenshots of what a level is going to look like. The music had to be written before the actual filming itself, so I there was no way that I could possibly see anything. So that was and all the other challenge was distilling each character down to a single piece of music was a huge challenge. But again, Sam is fantastic at giving great illustrative analogies, describing personalities and describing each character. And he created a backstory for each character so that you knew, where they went to school and what their likes and dislikes were, and you knew each character's whole life, which may or may not come through in a lot of the game. But he's created a whole world.
That's I'm like I like so this is really cool for me because I didn't know much about this game other than the trailer, and it was very hard for me to discern what was actually happening in the trailer and what the gameplay would be. So like the more you talk about this, especially with the creative process behind the scenes, I'm really looking forward to trying this game out when it comes out.
Great, yeah.
So to kind of move on a little bit, I wanted to learn a little bit more about you as I mean, the Telling Lies game that's coming out soon looks really or sounds really amazing, and I'm really excited for it. But I'd like to know a little bit more about you prior to that. So, one of the big things that I read online was that you were one of the 2016 BAFTA Breakout Brits. Could you tell me what exactly that is? Because, I'm an American. I don't really know too much about the culture over in the UK or the awards. So it'd be really cool for me to learn more about it.
BAFTA Breakthrough Brits is a wonderful scheme, sort of a scheme. It's an acknowledgement. Every year, the BAFTA selects roughly around 18 people that they feel are really breaking through in the industry. They traditionally tend to pick actors and filmmakers, directors that are really breaking through and are on the cusp of doing really great things that they think. They whittle it down, I think, from well over 1,000 applicants, and they bring it down to 18 people. Though I've been working in film and TV for the last 20 years, writing music for film and TV, mainly in documentaries. That's my foundation of how I've scored. I scored a couple of projects. One was a documentary musical, and another one was a hybrid drama documentary. And that got me a few accolades and got to the attention of certain people. And they thought that that was my, I've been sort of breaking through into feature films and fiction over the last 3, 4 years. So I suddenly became a breakthrough after writing music for
That's
so
kind
long
of, that's kind
in
of an
other
odd thing
areas.
to happen. Like, I don't know, that would be such a weird experience. It's like I've been here for 15, like 20 years, guys. Like, what took you so long?
So what happens as a BAFTA Breakthrough Brit is that they give you a year, and you get mentorship from people that you really admire or want to work with, or people that have inspired you. And one of the things that I wanted to do was to work in games. What inspires me creatively is to be able to tell stories and explore different ways of telling stories. So Telling Lies is one such way. There's another project that I worked on called Mumbai High, a musical, and that was my breakthrough project as a BAFTA Breakthrough Brit. And it's a documentary. but it's also a musical, a documentary about five or six children in the slums of Mumbai. And it's about them wanting to study their way out of poverty.
Okay.
We've all seen news items and documentaries about the third world and poverty and famine and places where they're less fortunate than us. And one can suffer from fatigue. When you see this constantly in the media. And what Mumbai High does is the director wanted to engage the audience using song. So we have six kids, six teenagers in the slums of Mumbai, and you see them interviewed about their lives and their dreams and their hopes and their aspirations, and then suddenly they'll burst out into song, and they can't sing or dance. They're just
Okay.
ordinary people. So I had to fly out. I was flown out with the film crew to India to train them and to write these songs that represent their personalities, sort of really immerse myself in their lives and to teach them how to sing and sing their stories, sing their lives, sing about their lives on camera. The charm and the authenticity and the integrity of these kids is what makes this
Yeah.
film so charming. And then we'll have a little bit of interview, then we'll go back and go into a bit of a song and a dance, and then we'll come out halfway through and come back into reality and normal life. And the film very cleverly interweaves those sort of narrative threads.
That's so cool. When I read it about it online, I wasn't expecting it to be kind of like that. I love the fact. I mean, I guess it makes sense. Like they weren't there. If it's a documentary, then it wouldn't be like professionally trained singers and dancers. I don't know why. I just saw a musical. I'm like, oh yeah, there's going to be dancers and stuff in it. But it didn't even hit me to think that like it was just it's just kids who are just having fun. That is amazing.
Yeah, but some of what they're singing about is heartbreaking, because there's one girl who lives in a tin shack on the side of a railway line, and she has they ha she lives with her mother and her two younger sisters. She's 15 years old, and her dream is to play football like David Beckham,
Okay.
and she wants to go to school every day and learn to improve and better her education. And her father is an addict, and they steal the electricity line from the neighboring building, and they have no running water, and yet she has this wonderful relationship with her mother. And so the song is It has a lot of bittersweet poignancy, because I decided to write a song about the fact that they have no water, and water is everything in their lives. And the song is a duet between herself and her mother, and the bond and the love that they share. No matter through thick and thin, they will be together. So there's a so it's very moving and
Yeah.
emotional. And it was a wonderful project to work on.
That's amazing. I can kind of, I mean, I'm very blessed to have grown up in a in like a, my like you know, I've been, you know, I live in a first world country. I'm very blessed to have grown up here. I have gone to I don't know if Mexico is considered a third world country, but like my church has gone on missions trips to there, and we've gone to places called there's a I was about to say the bodega. That's a building. It's called the Colonias, and it was a very eye-opening experience for me because the way you kind of described that girl's living conditions and that like the tin house and everything. That's I we I got to experience. Well, not actually experience it, but we would go there. We would go to the Colonias, and it's basically like a government plot of land that they just give to people, and like they give them nothing else. They truck in water every day, like fresh clean water, but that's pretty much about it. It's just bottle like giant, like you know, the 2 gallon tub like things that you see in water coolers. And we would give out you know, like rice and beans and clothes. And
Amazing.
unfortunately, we haven't been able to do that the last couple, like the last 10 years or so, because of the drug cartels. They pretty much run it, so it's not safe for us, unfortunately, anymore
Gosh.
to go, which is it's a heartbreaker because that was probably the most important experience I could ever have in my life, just to
Yes.
see like how lucky I am type of thing. So
Yeah.
I need to watch this documentary now, because it's
Yeah.
really it this is really interesting to me.
I mean, I'm very privileged in that I like to travel for work reasons. I recently I was asked by the British Council to run a series of masterclasses and workshops on music for film and TV in Kiev in the Ukraine, which is only about 2 hours from Chernobyl.
Oh, really?
So it's really interesting region over here with film. I mean, they're all great composers, and the film industry in the Ukraine is growing, and they're making at least 100 films a year now, which I know is nothing compared to the US and other markets. But over there, the concept of film and TV and games composers is not as that industry is not structured like it is in Europe or in America. So I'm helping great composers and educating them about what it's like to work in the industry and running workshops for them and making them understand the how it works and how to write for film and TV. And over there, you know, everyone here in the West, shall we say, wants to be like the Hollywood guys and the LA composers, and they take great inspiration from successful film and TV composers here. Whereas over there, they don't want to be like that. They're because of the geographical location, they're literally a halfway point between Eastern Europe, the Russian influences and old communist influences, and Central Asia. So I was working with composers from Kazakhstan, Georgia, Azerbaijan, Ukraine, obviously, and it was very inspiring for me and nourishing for me to see and hear those influences, and hopefully they gain something out of me and my experience rather of working in the West in the way that we work here.
That is
So
so cool.
cross-fertilization that can go on by being able to travel and get inspiration from different cultures and musically and with film as well. I just love it.
That's really cool. One of the other things that I saw on your credit list, in speaking of just kind of like other cultures and things like that, was it came out this year, For Sama, a documentary that came out this year. That looked really powerful to me. What was it like working on that? And kind of,
Oh,
I guess, for the listeners, what is it about?
For Summer is a feature documentary that was released in the States about 3 weeks ago, and it'll be out in the UK in mid-September. It's a film about Wad al-Khatib, a Syrian female camerawoman filmmaker who's in her mid-20s, and she filmed documented the Syrian uprising that has taken place over the last 5 6 years. So she filmed over 500 hours worth of material, that everything that was going on in her life, through the bombing and the shelling and the killing of the Syrian people in Aleppo. And it's so a lot of the footage that you see was used by Channel 4 News in the UK when they were doing all the news reports. But then they said, well, we'd like to make a film about her and her experience of the uprising and the revolution from a woman's point of view. It's a remarkable, astonishing film because you experience war through her eyes, and it's very personal and intimate. And the film is basically a love letter to her daughter, a baby daughter who she meets her husband, who's a surgeon out there. They set up a makeshift hospital in Aleppo, and she gets pregnant and gives birth to her daughter, whose name is Sama. So the film is For Sama. I was involved in the film for 18 months. We were in the edit for 18 months because it was a huge challenge to try and craft a film out of
500
this.
hours, that's insane. The footage to whittle down.
And it's about, the film is basically about humanity. It's about love and life and death against the epic backdrop of war, if you like, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And so musically, I felt a huge responsibility on weight on my shoulders to try and do justice to Wad's life, because she's the co-director of the film with another English director, Edward Watts, and they both directed the film. He came in once she had shot everything, he was brought in to edit the film and piece it all together with her. And so she would be giving me music notes, which was really, I've never experienced anything like it before. Normally, when I work on a project, I'm working with actors and I see them on the screen, and it's either a fictional story or it's a documentary where I'm working with the director and the editor and the film producers. But to actually work with the person who is in the film and then have them telling you, giving you feedback on your music. And I felt that I had to do the film justice and to do her life justice, and portray it in the most truthful way. So that was a wonderful, immersive, personal sort of storytelling journey. And it's great to see the film doing so well, and that audiences around the world have been resonating with this film. I've went to Cannes Film Festival and to Toronto and to other film festivals with the film, and people are just responding to this film in the most wonderful way.
That's amazing to hear. That's I don't know. When I saw the not the trailer of it, but I was reading about it. It just seemed like a really important thing to that I'm happy has been made, because it just you don't see things in not even just from especially from a woman's perspective, but just like you don't see things from that perspective all that often. So
Yeah,
it's really
yeah.
cool that something like that is being made or is made. Sorry, not being made. It's
Yeah.
done.
Yeah. Yes. So yes, it's and it's about getting the message out, about we could be the people in Syria. It could be you, me, any one of us. It could happen. They're just ordinary people whose lives have been turned upside down by the regime. And this is, so working in documentaries for me is very important. Being a part of stories that are real and important and have an impact or some kind of social impact on audiences and educate audiences about situations around the world. That's what I find so nourishing and about working in documentaries, because you're part of a team. It's all about collaboration, but you're part of something bigger than just the music. And I'm not saying that the music isn't important, but the music has a huge role to play in the way that people perceive and experience stories, the emotional undercurrent of a film or a game or any kind of form of entertainment, as we call that's so to be a part of that experience, when people experience movies or games in the cinema, or sitting there with their headphones in binaural sound or Dolby Atmos, or it's just it's all wonderful. I just that sort of rich tapestry of entertainment that we have.
So on to a slightly lighter subject, because that for Sama is pretty heavy. I wanted to ask in what types of I guess genres of music do you enjoy composing for? Is there any specific type that you like to do? Like you mentioned before, like New Age classical, I think that someone you're listening to, is that something that you go for, or did I say
Well,
that
I think
correctly? I don't know.
modern
Modern
classical,
classical, that's
yeah,
it.
neoclassical is this new
There we go.
term that's bandied about. Everyone loves to categorize and subcategorize
Yes.
and put music into boxes, don't we? That's how we consume on Netflix and Spotify and so on. I am the sum of all my influences when I was growing up. So I listen and I write in so many different styles of music, but there is an essence of me as my personality finds its way into my music, and I guess that's what people say you have your own voice, don't you? Your own way of expressing yourself, which becomes a trademark sound. And I gravitate towards the way I construct pieces together sometimes. I mean, I like to mix things up. I don't like to be stagnant because I feel that the moment I'm always researching and writing in new and different styles of music. So I guess what my comfort zone is the orchestra and using orchestral elements. But I also love to integrate into that world music and sort of unusual sound sources, which stems from my music engineering. One of the first jobs I ever had was working as assistant to Peter Gabriel, and so I loved world music and music from other cultures, but I don't like to use those instruments and sounds from other cultures in an obvious way. I also like to throw a twist on them and manipulate it and treat it and in the computer. So those kinds of treatments come from that sort of willingness to an interest in experimentation comes from my sound design background. You know, the orchestra and world music and sound design, it's all and using electronics. And when I studied maths, you know, I was into synthesizers and the wave equation and physics. So all those kinds of interests have found their way into what I do somehow. But yeah, I mean, I love getting inspired and listening to all different styles of music, and I'll take elements of those and they will eventually find their way into my compositions somehow.
And speaking of music then, what would be some of your favorite, like other composers in the industry that you enjoy their music? Like any either A, role models, or just B, like even if they're not a role model, just someone who you enjoy their music?
Oh, I listen to so much and so many things that it changes on a daily basis, Josh.
I can relate to that.
It may sound a bit odd, but I don't listen to music for fun very much. I listen, I do a lot of research, so every project's different, and I'll listen to a lot of music for research, and I then admire and get value and enjoy lots of different things about different types of music. So I love listening to production and how music production. I used to be a huge fan of, I still am, of Daniel Lanois, and of course Peter Gabriel, who was a huge influence for me musically, and Dave Bottrell. He's in the engineers. I actually admire music engineers' works. But I listen to sort of modern neoclassical work and composers. You know, I've gone depending on what I'm writing. What am I listening to at the moment? I'm really enjoying Colin Stetson's score for Hereditary at the moment. In terms of film composers, Johan Johansson's music is, and sadly he passed away last year, which is a huge loss to the film music community. But what he's done is achieved was groundbreaking. I enjoy listening to composers that are on the edge of pushing the boundaries of music. But then that being said, I grew up loving Hans Zimmer's music. And as a child, I was listening to film composers such as Ennio Morricone and John Williams. And I went through phases of really loving Thomas Newman's scores and his style of being able to be ambivalent. We also, in music, not being positive or negative, but he managed to sit down this road of being ambivalent musically and neutral, which is very popular. People don't want melody very much at the moment. Yes, there's a place for it in certain types of scores, but modern contemporary scoring, people don't want melodies so much anymore. And so that's, I get asked all the time to not make my music too strong emotionally. So, but I'm a huge fan of melody. I love a good tune.
Do you think that the shift away away from that is due to, do you think they're asking composers to write music that reinforce the scene versus if you have a melody, it might make itself stand out too much compared to the film?
Yeah, they don't want the music to lead and tell the story in such a strong, bold way. And maybe sort of fashions and trends in filmmaking, especially sort of independent filmmaking, where people don't use any music at all. I'm a huge fan of not just composers, but of filmmakers. For instance, Yorgos Lanthimos, the Greek filmmaker who made The Favourite, which was a breakout hit, his biggest success to date. Lynn Ramsey is an amazing filmmaker. They use music in a very radically different way. Yorgos doesn't work with composers. He takes existing pieces of music, a bit like Tarantino has traditionally done, where he'll take
Yeah.
songs and tracks and use them as score in his films. There are some filmmakers that work with composers, like Lynn Ramsey works with Johnny Greenwood and Mika Levy, for instance. They don't write to picture. They write music away from the film, and that music then gets used by the filmmaker, and they can do with it what they want. So they don't follow the traditional idioms of scoring to picture as John Williams has done, or Giacchino, or more traditional forms of scoring film.
So I guess to kind of wrap all of this up, I wanted to ask one more question of you. What do you have coming up soon? What do you have? What are some upcoming projects that you have coming out or that you're able to talk about?
Well, I'm working on a really interesting film at the moment. It's a BFI feature doc called The Reason I Jump, and that'll be out next year. It's quite an experimental film. It blurs the lines between music and sound design, as in music design, and it's based on a bestseller book called The Reason I Jump, written by a 12, 13-year-old Japanese boy who suffers from nonverbal autism. And so
Oh.
it's an attempt to get the audience to, it's very immersive, and it'll be in Dolby Atmos. And it's the film tries to explain to the audience what it feels like to be autistic, and for you to get inside their minds and their heads.
Yeah.
And sound and music are play a very important part of that experience. So that's huge fun at the moment, where I'm experimenting with all sorts of weird, wonderful found sounds and sound design, and the human voice, using it as a musical instrument. It's huge fun.
That's amazing. You have a lot of big stuff this year between Telling Lies and For Sama and then The Reason I Jump. Is that coming out this year or next year?
That'll probably come out early this year, but I've had a couple of films, feature films that came out earlier this year. One's a World War II drama called Enemy Within. It's based on a true story. It's about a Japanese World War II pilot that crash landed off the coast of Hawaii in December 1941, having bombed Pearl Harbor. So that was a really and he was rescued by the islanders. They have no idea who he is. They save his life, and then they find out a few weeks later, through a crackly old radio broadcast at the time, that he's actually the enemy. So that was a fun film to work on. And another film that I worked on is a psychological horror called Darkness Visible, which was I've never scored horror before, so that was got a lot of had a lot of fun scoring that. So they're out on Amazon, I think,
Okay.
Apple, yeah, so they're available, recently been released. So yeah, it's been a busy year.
And then I guess to finish this all off, what do you have any social media you want to plug? Anything like that where people can follow you on online?
Yeah, I've got a website, nanitadesai.com, but I'm on Facebook as Nanita Desai, and on Twitter and on Instagram.
Sounds good. And for my listeners, as usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. Feel free to reach out to me, stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. And So that should be it. Thank you very much, Nanita, for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me, Josh. Been huge fun.
And that was my interview with Nanita. Once again, it was amazing to get to talk to her. And sincerely, Nanita, thank you for coming onto the podcast and talking about your upcoming projects, as well as all the stuff you did prior. So as I said at the end of the episode with her, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to reach out, StillLoadingContact@gmail.com, or check out my website, StillLoadingPodcast.com. And if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod, and giving a little bit just helps me with the shows, so please consider checking that out. And one last quick thing, shout out to the Podbeard Network, the network I'm a part of. Go check out all the amazing content on the Podbeard Network. You can go to podbeardnetwork.com for that. And that should be it. So thank you all once again for listening, and I will see you all next time. Thank you.